Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on food irradiation when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? It's pretty obvious that something is very wrong with them because they have now been banned from our public schools, public institutions, and our national consciousness. Instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we now see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And now they teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our schools, our public institutions, and we've now made them a part of our national psyche. You know, this is a radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers practiced and they advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. Now, there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we receive for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effect. So whether you call it the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, common law, natural law, karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And then click onto the email machine. Send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're up to where the rubber meets the road on the subject matter of food irradiation. What do you do about it? You know, if you don't have a solution to the problem, you might as well sit down, shut up, and fold your hands. Now, I'm not complaining about irradiated food. I know that that's the status quo, that we have irradiated food in this country, and we're going to get a lot more. That's why I made this report. The objective here is to irradiate all of the hamburger in the country, and then once they get all the hamburger in the country irradiated, then they'll start on the steaks and chops and everything else. There's coming a time here in America when probably 90% of all of the food that you get in the supermarket will be irradiated. Like it or lump it. The only foods that won't be irradiated are those foods that are going to be destroyed by or harmed by or nobody would buy because they're so icky and so gloppy that the irradiation destroys them for further resale. The reason I say that is because it extends the shelf life. It fits into the Global 2000 program. The people that want it have the money and they can lobby and buy the votes to put it in. And they've already done it, they are doing it, and they will continue to do it. And there isn't anything that you're going to do to stop it. Now, how do you like that? So now that that's the state of affairs, instead of throwing up our hands and saying, well, I guess I might as well shut up and just eat the stuff because there's nothing I can do about it, I don't buy into that program at all. There's a lot that I can do. I don't have to eat it, and I'm not going to. How's that? There's an alternative solution or two, and we'll take a look at some of those solutions. But before we get into that, let me tell you a little story from a guy from Great Britain. This comes from the healthierlife.co.uk, Join the Health Revolution on Irradiation. It's called The Clear and Present Danger You're Probably Eating Every Day. And the fellow starts off, he said, I've been on the fence about food irradiation for years. When it first made headlines and people began worrying about it, I did a little research of my own, and I didn't find anything that particularly concerned me. No, there weren't any studies proving that it was good for you, but there wasn't enough proof to convince me that it was terribly bad for you either. Plus, it was especially appealing to me because it eliminated trichinosis in pork. Pork is one of the most nutritious of meats, but it had to be cooked well done, to kill the trichinosis. In doing so, a great deal of the nutrient value of the meat is spoiled, and the overcooking causes homocysteine levels in the blood to increase. Irradiation made pork safe to eat again, or at least it seems so to me. But it has always been unclear as to what new toxins we're being exposed to as a result of eating irradiated food. So I thought it was about time I took a second look at this thing called irradiation, and what I saw wasn't very pretty. I received a startling email alert on this subject recently from an information wellspring called Health Sciences Institute. It's HSI. These alerts come 5 days a week, and they're free. You won't find many bargains like that. So let me pause here for a moment and let me reemphasize. That's called Health Sciences Institute. I don't have their email or their web page right in front of me, but I think if you looked it up on Google, Health Sciences Institute, you'd find it in short order. And we get it here from time to time. Dirk will click onto it, and you can have it sent to you free of charge, or you can just go to the computer and you can call it up, and then you can take a look at their articles, and they've got thousands of them. It's free of charge, and it's one of those health sciences institutes, one of those groups of activists who are trying to protect you from yourself. They're evangelists. They want to save you. They want you to write letters to your senators and representatives so that they'll stop irradiating your food, and they'll stop the Global 2000 program and stop the Federal Reserve hyperinflation and all these bad things that are going on. They're real dreamy people. But they also have some good research, and they'll tell you where the bodies are buried and where the rubber meets the road. So that's Health Sciences Institute. Now, he goes on to say, in this edition, the HSI e-alert reported that irradiation is a process by which a food product is exposed to extremely high doses of radiation to kill bacteria, parasites, and fungi that may cause spoilage or disease. And if that were all radiation did, that would be fine. But there's much more to it than that. Irradiation turns even the most nutritious foods into junk food. In an earlier e-alert, HSI panelist Dr. Alan Spreen stated that an abundance of nutrients are eliminated by this process. Joe Barron, another distinguished panelist, agreed and added as much as 70% of the vitamin A, B1 and B2 is irradiated, or in irradiated milk is destroyed, and about 30% of the vitamin C. And Barron elaborated with the following sobering information. He said, the food is exposed to hard irradiation, usually gamma rays from a source like cobalt-80, in doses of 100,000 to 3 million rads. Now, to give you a sense of how high a dose 3 million rads is, you need to understand that a dose of just 10,000 rads will totally destroy any living tissue. Let me repeat that, boys and girls, so that you can get your feet on the floor here. Irradiation uses 100,000 to 3 million rads. That's a bunch, isn't it? 100,000. That's 10 times 10,000. Or 3 million. That's 300 times 10,000. All right? Now, 10,000 rads will totally destroy any living tissue. So the minimum dose of 100,000 rads is 10 times what it takes to destroy all living tissue. So you can rest assured that there is nothing alive in the hamburger that you're eating. Anything that has been irradiated, there is nothing living in it. Well, it ain't quite so, because it doesn't kill everything. There'll still be 4 or 5 enzymes that got away, and 4 or 5 E. coli bugs that got away, and 4 or 5 something else that got away. But for practical purposes, when you're talking about nutrition, and you talk about the cancer being, you know, cooked food is called the, how did I word this the other day? Cancer is called the cooked food disease. Cooked food disease. So when you get cancer, if you want to treat it holistically and naturally, I mean, if you want to cure the cancer, don't just want to treat it. Now you want to cure it. You get off of cooked foods and you eat all live foods. My wife did that here for 2 years and 8 months. She lived on live foods to kill the cancer in her body. Worked like a shot 28 years ago. So just remember this. When you get cancer, it was caused by cooked food, and if you want to get rid of it, you get off cooked food and you get on live foods. Well, this irradiation at the minimum dose is 10 times more than it takes to kill all life, living tissue. I think I made my point. Notice the words, any living tissue. Let's analyze that. When a pig or cow is killed, the animal is dead, but its tissues aren't. And this is when meat is at its most nutritious. If it's eaten fresh and not cooked to death, that's an apt term. So if 10,000 rads totally destroys living tissue, then irradiated meat that you purchased from the supermarket is essentially nutrition-free. It's not quite nutrition-free. They can't destroy 100% of the nutrition, but they can kill up to 80%, which leaves 20% of the nutrition left. So to get 100% of the nutrition, you'd have to eat 5 times more of it. Now, if we're not fat enough already, try eating 5 times more so that you can get the nutrition that you need. That ought to balloon you right up. Now, this isn't simple conjecture. The facts are in. Food irradiation is a clear and present danger to your health. And rats are dying of IFS. So are you next? Even the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, admits to some shocking results from animal research. In its final report approving food irradiation, the FDA admitted that when up to 35% of the lab animal diet was irradiated, the studies had to be terminated because of the premature mortality or morbidity. And in another investigation at the Medical College of Virginia in the United States, rats fed irradiated beef died of hemorrhagic syndrome in 34 days. All right, now let me put a little bracket around that. Let's come back and analyze that for a second. Some studies have been made. Remember 441 studies? Now, they threw out 334 of them and they kept 7. Or they threw out 336 and kept 5, whichever numbers you want to accept. As we've been going through the stack of material here, one group said they used 7 studies. Out of the 7 studies that they used, 3 of the studies were determined to be bogus studies, and that they're using the bogus studies to justify the use of the radiation. Isn't that just real special? Which is why I said to you when we opened the program today, I mean, you can forget about writing letters to Senator McConnell or Tom Harkins or Senator Jaffray of Vermont. Those guys are on the take. Those guys are getting paid by ADM and Cargill and Iowa Beef to enact the legislation to kill you. What in the hell would make you think that they're going to reverse their position, especially when they get paid $300,000 for the deed? How much are you paying? You know, if you'd step up to the plate there, Joe, and write your check for $500,000, as opposed to, let's say, Iowa Beef's $300,000, you know, they might listen to you. You know, if Iowa Beef can buy votes from senators, you can buy votes for senators. Just get your checkbook out. Unfortunately, the little guys like us, Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives, we don't have that kind of political clout. And we can't buy that kind of legislation. So, that being the case, then you can sit back and relax. If you're going to buy your hamburger at Kroger's and Safeway, you're going to buy your radiated hamburger. So just make up your mind to it. It's the way the game is going to be played. You don't have to buy hamburger at Kroger. I talked to you about that the other day. I said, hell, you can go out here and buy your own cow. Yeah, I know it's a wild new concept, you know, but people do that here all the time. They come here and they just buy the whole cow, send it into Gainesville and have it processed and put it in their freezer out in their laundry room, and then they eat out of their freezer and they have 100% organic beef. Bought it from me. And that's the way the game is played. You want to play the game? Let's play the game. I don't have to buy from Iowa Beef. I don't have to buy from Safeway and Kroger. And neither do you. It's a choice that you have to make. And the choice is, well, they got irradiated beef there in the store. Do I want to buy the irradiated beef, or do I want to go a step further, and do I want to sidestep it? If you don't want to take the time, effort, and energy, then sit down, shut up, ride the back of the bus, and enjoy the view. And if you don't like the cards that are being dealt, get the hell away from the table and let's go play a game someplace else. See how simple that is? If you don't like the way the cards are being dealt, get up from the table. Now, how would you like for your tombstone to read, "Here lies Joe Citizen, died from IFS at the age of 50. Now, IFS stands for Irradiated Food Syndrome. I just made it up. But if rats can get it from eating radiotoxic foods, then chances are you can get it too. All right, now here's the study. And in another investigation at the Medical College of Virginia in the United States, rats fed irradiated beef died of hemorrhagic syndrome in 34 days. Now, if you can feed rats irradiated beef and some of them start dying of hemorrhagic syndrome in 34 days, do you think maybe we could duplicate that study in humans? Why don't we put you on a diet of irradiated beef, and that's all we're going to feed you for 90 days, to see whether or not we can kill you? You want to participate in that study? Well, I took a look at it and I said, you know, I don't think I want to participate in that study. What I'm going to do is sit back and let you participate in that study. And then I want to watch you and a few hundred other people, or a few thousand. I want to watch this for a few years and let me see how you fare out. And if you fare out real good, well, then I'll start eating some irradiated beef just like you. And if you don't fare out so good, I'll say, well, now you see, I was a little suspicious of that, and it killed old Bob, Joe, and Jane, so I think I'll stay away from it. It's kind of like thalidomide, you know. I never did try thalidomide, so I don't know if it's good or bad. But the people that tried it came up with birth defects, and that wasn't so good, and I didn't want that, so my staying away from thalidomide was a pretty good choice. I let other people experiment with it first. I did that with Vioxx, and after a bunch of people died from Vioxx, I said, now see, I don't need to experiment with Vioxx. They tried it on 4 million people. Several thousand of them died. Hey, the study is in. The study is done. Vioxx is bad for my health. And it's done with real, live human guinea pigs. And by God, thank you, thank you, thank you for going out and testing that for me, all you Vioxx users. And now that I've got the facts, I'll avoid it like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now this guy comes down to this and he says, One last testimonial from a friend and colleague of mine who said, ionizing radiation causes free radicals and lipid peroxidation. Ionizing radiation sterilizes by scrambling molecules. It changes molecular structure, and nutrients can become non-nutrients or even anti-nutrients. It can transform nutrients into empty calories like refining. It's a conspiracy to extend shelf life and enhance profits for the corporation, and I won't consume any of that stuff if I can help it. Well, I mentioned that to you before, that the purpose behind this is to extend shelf life. That's the number one purpose. The rest of it is just hyperbole. And remember that extending the shelf life is very valuable. Let me show you what's going on here. Hudson Meatpackers up in, I think it was Nebraska, had to destroy 25 million pounds of hamburger because it got E. coli in it. Let me show you something here. Let's suppose that hamburger is worth $1 a pound. And we got 25 million pounds of it. Now, this is a big batch, see, 25 million pounds. That's $25 million. Do you know how many votes we could buy in the Congress for 25 million bucks? Well, listen to this. I read this to you the other day. The three members of Congress who took the lead in passing this 1997 law have been amply rewarded by the food industry. Contributions from food production and processing interests from 1993 to 98 were as follows. $380,000 to Senator McConnell, $84,000 to Senator Jeffords, and $153,000 to Representative Gansky. All right, now let me show you. If you can buy these guys three votes over a period of 5 years, let's just put this down here. Here's 380. 84 and 153. That's $617,000. All right. Now that's $617,000 divided by 3. That's $205,000 for each one of those senators or representatives. But it occurred over a period of 5 years. So let's divide that by 5. And that's only $41,000 a year. Alright, $41,000 a year. $41,000 will buy a vote in the Congress. Now let's just multiply that times 535. And that's $22,006,000. Let me try that one again. I'm at 41, and I'm going to try this, times 535. Is that $21,935,000? Okay. Now here's the Hudson Food Company. And the Hudson Food Company just has one bad batch of hamburger, 25 million pounds at a buck a pound, costs them $25 million. My God, for less than that, $21 million, they can buy every damn vote in the Congress. I mean, these guys aren't for sale for astronomical sums of money. $40,000 will do it. Now, come on, boys and girls, let's wake up and get real. You see, you're not giving any money to these re-election campaigns. You know, you're not doing your fair share here to help re-elect these guys forever in the Congress. And by the way, the incumbents get returned to Congress at the rate of 90% or better. To upset, you know, an incumbent, I mean, the incumbent's got to be really a bad guy. I mean, he's really got to do something crazy. Now, here's the action to take. Unfortunately, aside from moving to a farm, the guy says, unfortunately. What in the hell is unfortunate about moving to a farm? I'm a farmer. I live on a farm. I produce my own food, fiber, and shelter. I'm going to cover that in a moment. I produce my own. I know it's a wild concept today in the year 2005, but 100 years ago, most Americans lived on the land, and they produced their own food, clothing, and shelter. Isn't that crazy? Now, those are the three basics to life, food, clothing, and shelter, and Americans are totally divorced from food, clothing, and shelter. They are now total wards of corporations that provide them with their food, clothing, and shelter, as I'll demonstrate here in a moment. He says, unfortunately, aside from moving to a farm and growing all of your own vegetables and slaughtering all of your own meat, there isn't a lot you can do to make sure you aren't eating or drinking any of these irradiated items. Food irradiation has been permitted in the UK since 1991 for specific types of foods, fruit, vegetables, cereals, bulbs and tubers, spices and condiments, fish and shellfish and poultry. Any food that manufacturers who wish to irradiate these foods are not allowed to operate without a license from the Food Standards Agency. And any food which is irradiated must be clearly labeled with either the words irradiated or treated with ionizing radiation. Worldwide, 37 countries, including 7 member states of the European Community and the United States, permit food irradiation. In some, such as South Africa, what is known as the Radura symbol, looks like a daisy, is also used to indicate irradiated foods, although this is not currently used in the UK. So make sure that you're on the lookout for these foods that are labeled irradiated or treated with ionizing radiation and just flat out refuse to buy them. We already covered that. Most of the food that you're eating that is irradiated comes from the restaurant. McDonald's buys it from Iowa Beef. Iowa Beef sends the package, and it's marked clearly irradiated beef. But McDonald's doesn't have to tell you, the consumer, that they're buying irradiated beef any more than they have to tell you that we put 10% kangaroo into our hamburger. Remember that story here a few years back? You found out on the east coast of the United States that they were importing hamburger from Australia with 10% kangaroo, which for the average Joe six-pack American doesn't mean anything. But to those of us that practice the clean and unclean meat laws, which is 5 million Jews, 7 million Muslims, and 36 other incidental Americans, who don't want to eat unclean meat, we're eating at McDonald's and we're getting 10% kangaroo meat. Well, that doesn't set well with us. Of course, we're just a small minority and nobody cares about minorities, but then I care about me. I'm a minority and I care about me, and I'm real concerned about kangaroo meat in my hamburger, and I'm real concerned about ionizing the beef. I'm real concerned about 80% loss of the nutritional value in the foods that I buy, which really transfers or translates into an 80% price increase in the food, not to mention the degeneration that it causes in my body when I eat that kind of crap and the free radicals run around and give me cancer. So now we come down to, well, gosh, what are we going to do about that? Is there a solution to the problem? You bet there is. I don't have a problem. I'm not complaining. I'm reporting. I'm not complaining. Listen, the powers that be are getting a lot of bribes and gifts and kickbacks, and they're for sale, and we've got the best Congress that money can buy, as evidenced by the fact that these big manufacturers, these big multinational corporations are buying them. So that tells me that I'm not going to accomplish very much if I were to write a letter to my senator. I got to tell you a little story here, because back in the old days, I used to be one of those guys, you know, that go into the legislature. They call them lobbyists, and go into the legislature and testify before committees and try to influence the legislative outcome. Well, one time they were trying to pass a seatbelt law up in Idaho, seatbelt law. Now, I'm not opposed to seatbelts. Don't get me wrong. I think seatbelts are wonderful. I just don't think that people should be punished for not using a seatbelt. I think that using a seatbelt is a choice that you make in life, and that if you want to make that choice, you make it. And if you don't want to make that choice, you don't make it. All automobiles have seatbelts in them. When you buy a car, it's going to have a seatbelt. Whether you want to buckle it or not, your business. Well, that's the way I saw it. Now, the Insurance Institute came up, and they testified before the committee, and they put on a hell of a program. I mean, they were the hell. Great program. They had charts and graphs and statistics, and two guys came up from San Francisco. They weren't even voters in Idaho. Just a couple of interloping carpetbaggers from San Francisco come tripping into the Transportation Committee in the House chamber, and they testified. And then I brought in, this is little Georgie Gordon now, 105 witnesses, two witnesses from every county, 44 counties in the state. I had two witnesses from every county in Idaho to testify, 105 in all. There was three from a couple counties. And we testified against the seatbelt law, and every one of us was a registered voter. Every single person that testified is a registered voter. And the bill was reported out of committee 7-2 in favor of the seatbelt legislation. So I had a buddy in the House at that time, and I went over, we were having lunch one day, and I complained to him, and I said, this is outrageous, you know, and I told him the statistics and the numbers, and he said, well, you know, George, you just don't understand politics. Did you get that, boys and girls? He said, George, you just don't understand politics. And then I said, well, just what is it about politics that you don't think I understand? He said, well, this is the way this game is played. You see, we're Republicans, and we have a majority in both the House and the Senate, but it's not veto-proof, and John Evans is a Democrat. The governor is a Democrat. So what happens is this. The Republicans came up with a $36 million education bill, and we want that bill passed. And we can pass it because we got the votes. But we got to have the governor to sign it. And the governor says, nix to you, and I'm going to veto that bill unless you give me some things I want. So he gives us a laundry list, and in the laundry list is this obnoxious, obscure little bill over here called Buckle Your Seatbelt. So when we Republicans look at the seatbelt law, we don't like it. We think that it's obnoxious. And then when we look at our education bill, we say, well, which is more important to us, seatbelts or education? And since education's more important, we made a trade-off. So we agree that we'll let the governor have his bill, so we report it out of committee. So I said, the majority of Idaho's citizens who are opposed to it at the rate of 105-2 don't have any input into this process, then, do they? This guy's name is Rusty Barlow. And Rusty said to me, that's right. You don't have any input into the legislative process. Now, that's from an Idaho representative. I'm a lobbyist. I'm in here trying to affect legislation. I'm bringing in registered voters. But the National Insurance Institute is bringing in two lobbyists with money in their bags, boys and girls. And money buys the votes. See how simple that is? Now, that's the way that game is played. So if you want to go play in that arena, get after it. But after that discussion with Rusty, I said, you know, I don't think that the political process works very well for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. It works well for Iowa Beef. It works well for Cargill and Archer Daniels Midland. I don't deny that. It works well for Merck and Pfizer Pharmaceuticals. But it doesn't work for truck drivers, plumbers, carpenters, and electricians. So boys and girls, we got to come up with a smarter remedy and a better solution, which is coming up right after this reminder. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. Just go to the website and you can pick that up. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, economics, politics, history, religion, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call direct 417-273-4967. Hey, you remember this old-timey guy from India? His name was Mahatma Gandhi. You ever see that movie, Gandhi? Well, somebody wrote a book about him, and there was a movie made. It was a pretty informative movie. I watched it, oh, hell, probably 3 or 4 times. And I watched it because I wanted to learn more about his techniques. The guy was a masterful politician. And, of course, I was interested in politics at one time, and I said, well, let me figure out a way here that I can learn how to use the political process to my benefit. I mean, everybody wants the laws to be enacted so that it benefits them. And, after all, that's all Archer Daniels, Midland, and Cargill, and Iowa Beef are doing. You know, they want the laws enacted that benefit their businesses. One time I was in the legislature testifying before the committee, and what they were trying to enact was the Compulsory Insurance Act. You know, that law that requires that you buy insurance, or that you have insurance before you can register your car. And I thought, well, that's kind of a bizarre law. The insurance industry, you know, has a lot of gonads to walk in here and say, we want a law passed that requires everybody in the state of Idaho to buy our product. Think of it for a minute. I mean, gosh, wouldn't that be wonderful for movie theater owners, that everybody in the state, by law, is required to go out to the movies once a week under penalty of law. And if you stay home and watch television and you don't go out to the movies, we're going to fine you $300 and put you in jail for 90 days. Or what about the carpet industry? What if the law of your state required that everybody has to have wall-to-wall carpet in their homes? Well, at least one room in your home has to have wall-to-wall carpet. And if you don't have wall-to-wall carpet in at least one room of your home, you're subject to a $300 fine or 90 days in jail. My God, that would work good for restaurants too. You have to eat out at least once a week. And if we catch you, not eating out, not eating in a restaurant, any restaurant, you have a freedom of choice. You can eat in any restaurant you want. We believe in freedom in America. But if we catch you eating in your home for 7 days and you don't eat out at least once a week, we're going to fine you $300 and lock you up in jail for 90 days. I got to mulling that over a little bit, and I said, my God, you know, if we carry this out to its ultimate extreme, every business in the state, you know, in order to receive equal protection and due process of law, will need a law enacted just like the insurance industry that requires us periodically to buy their products. It'd be a hell of a boon to business, trade, commerce, business, and industry. It would boost the economy. Keep money spending. It would prime the pump. It's probably one of the greatest ideas that I've ever thought of. And actually, I didn't think of it. It was the National Insurance Institute. Well, anyway, they're in the House committee testifying as to why it is that everybody should have insurance. They called it the Financial Responsibility Act. Actually, insurance is the exact opposite to financial responsibility. It takes all financial responsibility away from you and shifts it to a guardian called an insurance company and creates a guardian-ward relationship in which you're the ward and the insurance company is the guardian. That's what it really does. It violates the scripture because God insists that all of us practice strict liability, and insurance is limited liability. So limited liability, insurance, in any way, shape, or form or manner, is a violation of the strict liability statute of the law of Moses. But then, you know, what the hell does Moses and God know about economies anyway? So I was in there testifying, and I said, well, listen, I'm in the waterbed business, and I operate the waterbed factory in Atlantis Manufacturing Company, and I want this committee to report out of committee a law that requires every citizen in Idaho to buy, own, and sleep on a waterbed in the interests of the health, safety, and welfare of the people of the state who have bad backs and are having all kinds of health problems caused by hard mattresses and bad bedding, under penalty of 90 days in jail and a $300 fine, and that everybody must carry proof of waterbed ownership on his person at all times, just like your Selective Service card. The 9 members of the committee were looking at me like I was Mork from Work. I mean, they looked at me like I was stupid. And I said, well, excuse me, boys and girls, but if the insurance industry can come in here and lobby this committee and ask for this committee to enact a law that requires that we buy their product, why can't I come in here and request that this committee enact a law for everybody to buy my product? And then, of course, the auto dealers can come in and the movie owners can come in and the carpet industry can come in and everybody else can come in and request and require and demand that the legislature pass legislation requiring that we buy all of their products. You know, what's good for the goose ought to be sauce for the gander. Well, they gave short shrift to my request, but they passed the compulsory insurance law. That was one of John Evans' laundry list, remember? And, of course, that benefits the insurance industry. Now, the insurance industry spends a lot of money bribing your senators and representatives. Now, of course, we don't call that bribery in America. That's against the law. We've got laws against bribery, boys and girls. We don't allow bribes and bribery in America. We call them campaign contributions. So get it straight. There's no bribery going on in America. Far be it from me to claim that any of my trusted representatives and senators are being bribed, because that's simply not true. They're receiving campaign contributions for their due diligence in passing legislation in the interests of the people and the health, safety, and welfare of the population of America. It's like George Bush protecting us from terrorism. He gave us the Patriot Act to protect us from terrorists. I haven't been bothered by any Muslim terrorists lately, but I've been bothered by a lot of damn Republican terrorists. You know, I never voted for a Democrat in my life. I voted the straight Republican ticket. I belong to the National Association of Manufacturers. I was what Tricky Dick called the silent majority. I employed 30 people, produced $1 million a year, and paid $200,000 a year in taxes. Now, I haven't voted for 30 years, but if I was going to vote, I can assure you it wouldn't be for a damn Republican. I got cured on Republicans by George Bush. You know, the guy that spent more money than all the other presidents in history before him, the conservative candidate, the Republican. Oh, my God. Let's see, what was our subject matter this week? food irradiation. How in the hell did we get off on George Bush? All right, now let's talk about what Mahatma Gandhi did. Mahatma Gandhi came to the conclusion that the Indians could never get their political freedom from the British as long as they kept feeding the British with their money. So one day he woke up and he said, you know, one of the biggest drains on the Indian economy and one of the biggest benefits that the British get from 300 million Indians over back in the '30s, you know, 300 million Indians, is that we buy all of our clothes from Great Britain. Now, boys and girls, here in America, 200 years ago, Americans made their own thread. Yeah, they had a spinning wheel. And they'd go out and they'd shear their sheep, and then they would take that wool and they would spin it into thread, and then they would weave it into cloth, and then they would sew it into clothes. Now, I know that's a foreign and alien ideology to Americans today. But let's just follow this through. Then the next thing that came along was somebody invented the weaving process, cloth-making process, and how to spin one thing and another. And so they moved that to water wheels and factories. And so in the eastern United States, you know, in North and South Carolina and so on, they came up with a textile industry. By 1900, nobody in America was spinning his own thread, or in most cases, making their own clothes. Now, I can remember my granny still making clothes. They would buy bolts of fabric, and then they would make clothes, make especially for women, make dresses and things like that. Men didn't do that. Men bought their shirts, you know, Arrow shirts, and bought their pants from Levi Strauss. But women were still making their dresses. And hell, in the 30s, they were buying sacks of flour so that they could get the sack because they got the fabric, and then they would make their dresses. Okay, well, anyway, the long and short of it was he got enough Indians to start making their own thread, making their own, they called it homespun clothes. And they broke the back of the British textile industry and their monopoly in India. And one day during World War II, they said, well, what do you want? And he said, I want you to leave. And he said, well, that's not going to happen. He says, yeah, well. He said, you see, when it becomes so unprofitable for you people, you'll just pack up and leave. By 1947, India was a drag on the British economy. You know, for every dollar that they made in India, it cost them two. And so one day they just woke up and said, you know, this India thing over here isn't very profitable anymore. I guess we'd just leave. Same thing would happen with irradiated food. See, if Americans, you know, woke up one day and said, you know, I just won't buy hamburger. I can assure you, if Americans woke up in the morning and said, I'm not buying hamburger until I can get non-irradiated hamburger, you'd solve that irradiation problem in hamburger in about 24 hours. I mean, 24 hours. Problem is that Americans aren't going to give up their hamburger any more than Americans are going to go out and spin their own thread and make their own clothes. And until you do that, you're going to have this guardian ward relationship. So. All right. Now, same thing happened with food. Because by the end of World War II, see, when I was raised back in the Depression years, the end of the Depression, into the World War II, and after World War II, into the 50s, Americans used to grow their own food. Very common for Americans. I worked for Russell Harvey, had a big garden during World War II. My granny and granddad, they had a garden. Everybody in Corbell had a garden, called them Victory Gardens. Americans, by and large, produced their own food. Now, not in the cities, but all the country folk did. In 1920, 44% of Americans lived on the land. Did you know that? Today, 3% of us live on the land. So look at the difference between 1920, when nearly half of us lived on the land, and 2005, when only 3% of us live on the land. And let me tell you, the 3% of us that are out here on the land are just as incompetent at growing food as are the people in the cities. Because the dairy farmer, he doesn't know how to plant a garden. He buys his food at Kroger's like everybody else. And the beekeeper, he buys his milk down in the grocery store. He doesn't milk his own cow. Just thought I'd share that with you. Now, there are a few Americans that have gone back to the land. We call them hippies, you know, crazies, vegetarians, you know, nutcases. And most of them live out in California, the land of fruits and nuts. So there are a few people that are self-sufficient. The Amish are self-sufficient. The Amish are not eating irradiated hamburger. The Amish make their own clothes. And the bottom line is, boys and girls, so can we. We can be self-sufficient in food, clothing, and shelter. You just have to put your mind to it. That's all. For instance, the other day I told you this about a guy left New Jersey. He sold his house for $36,000 or $226,000, something along that line. He traded his debt. And I think he walked out of there with $85,000 cash. Came down here and he paid $65,000 and bought a house and 7 acres in Ozark County. Yeah, I'm not kidding you. He sold this big albatross house, this liability. I don't know how big the house was, but the liability was a big albatross around his neck. He sells this $236,000 house. He gets the $236,000, pays the mortgage off, walks out with $85,000 cash, comes down here, buys a house and 7 acres for $65,000. He's got $20,000 left over in his pocket. Now all of a sudden, this guy is independent in his home, isn't he? I mean, he owns the thing free and clear. He's not a guardian ward relationship with the bank over his housing. Let's try clothes over here. We're facing a hyperinflation and a collapse of the economy. Next week I'm going to do an economic series. It isn't just the United States, boys and girls. It's every country in the world is on the knife's edge of economic oblivion. I'll show you that. All right, so all of a sudden you need about a 4-year supply of clothes. Can you see that? All of our shoes in America, boys and girls, come from China. 99% of the shoes consumed in America come from overseas. Only 1% are manufactured here in the United States. We have a balance of payments deficit of $735 billion a year. Boys and girls, at some point in time, those guys in China are going to wake up to the fact that they ain't getting paid. And when they wake up to that fact, they're going to quit sending you shoes. And when they quit sending you shoes, you are going barefoot. Got that? So wake up and smell the coffee. So why don't you go out today and buy 4 pairs of shoes and put them on the shelf? You know, up in your attic or something like that. And buy 4 pairs of shoes. That's a pair of shoes every year for the next 4 years for every member of your family. And do it now before another 1930 depression comes upon us and you don't have the money and you don't have the shoes to buy. Now, the theory behind all of you gold bugs out there is that you're going to take your gold and convert that gold into paper and then take that paper down to Walmart and buy those shoes. And my question is, what makes you think there's going to be any shoes in Walmart for you to buy? Now, in the 1930s depression, there was plenty of shoes on the shelf to buy, but there wasn't any money to buy it with. Now, today you got plenty of money, and the presumption is that we're going to have shoes on the shelf. I don't believe it. I don't think you're going to have food, clothing, or shelter to buy. I'm sure that Ben Helicopter Bernanke is going to dump $100 bills out of helicopters to make sure that you're plenty liquid. I'm just not sure that the Chinese are going to take all of that worthless paper and send you any shoes or big screen TVs or houses or food or anything else. So you might want to tuck that one away in your heart, boys and girls. And next time we're going to take a look at, you know, some real-life problems that are going on in China. See, the Chinese economy is on the ragged edge of collapse also. And as these economies collapse like they did back in the 1930s, it triggers wars. So you're going to have lots of wars going on. And they're going to have a draft. See, the United States needs a war real bad, and they're getting ready for one with Venezuela and Iran. So get used to the idea you're going to have more wars. When you have people that are unemployed, you got to have them doing something to keep them off the streets and out of the pool halls. And frontline soldiers are off the streets and out of the pool halls. So wake up to reality. Now, food. You know, we used to produce our own food, and you can produce your own food also. I mean, you could be on a lot, 50 by 100 square feet, with a 2,000 square foot house on it, and have 2,400 square foot of space on your lot in downtown Cleveland, Ohio, and produce enough food for a family of six. It's called French intensive culture. Boys and girls, you can do it in America. Hell, you can do it anywhere in the world. But you need to learn how. And you need some open pollinated seeds and a little know-how. And we teach that. We have a couple of classes here. How to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less. So if you're living out in the countryside and you're sitting on 3 acres, there are guys that are making $100,000 a year on 3 acres. Growing raspberries. And they make $40,000 an acre with raspberries. Can you believe that? Yeah, that's as good as marijuana. I don't know of a single marijuana grower that's making $40,000 an acre. Although, I had a brother one time, he was in the marijuana business. He was doing pretty well. He didn't grow any, but he was buying, selling, and trading it. So there's money to be made out there, boys and girls. And you don't have to make it in drugs. There's money to be made in raspberries, blackberries, blueberries, artichokes, all kinds of things. And we also teach a class on subsistence and survival. So if you're sitting over here saying to yourself, oh my God, the world is coming to an end, and there's an economic collapse, hyperinflation, and there's food shortages and wars coming up and all these nasty bad things, and oh, woe is me, and what am I going to do? Well, let's wake up and smell the coffee. There's a lot of money to be made. Back in the Depression years of the 30s, great fortunes were made. It's just that there won't be any great fortunes made in Calvin Klein jeans. That's all. So you want to get into those kinds of businesses and those kinds of enterprises that people need, you know, and they're not going to need Corvettes and Lexus. But what they're going to need is a mechanic that can fix up some old junker over here and make it run. I remember when I was a kid, people were driving after World War II. My Uncle Carol had a 1928 Marmon, straight eight. Burned a quart of oil every 100 miles. I mean, that thing, when it went down the road, it had as much blue smoke coming out the end as it had black smoke. By God, you know, you had to learn how to make one of them old antiques run. You had to keep that thing running if you wanted to keep wheels under your feet. Nobody was concerned about Lexus and Corvettes in 1946 and 47, 48. We were worried about Model T Fords and Model A's. I mean, you were uptown, man, if you had a Model A Ford. 1946. Well, I'm about out of time, boys and girls. We're going to have to cut it off right there. There's the story on irradiated food. Let your conscience be your guide. You got the dope. You got the information. So now make your choice. As they say down at the Blue Room, read them and weep. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. And we're heard around the world 7 days a week over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our webpage. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. We'll be talking about economics, world economics. Thanks for listening, and until then, good night, friends.